It's been 50 years since the biggest scandal in Australian political history.
It really is one of the most extraordinary times ever seen in the national capital.
It's a gripping story about big egos and big mistakes. It's a love story, it's a spy thriller, and there are still secrets left to uncover.
There is a document which is still under lock and key. They will not release it.
You can hear the ABC's award-winning podcast on the whole saga right now. Search for The 11th on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Democracy dates back to the ancient Greeks, but lately it feels like this political system is sitting on shaky ground. It's meant to empower citizens and give us a say on who's in charge. But across the Western world, some democratically elected leaders are acting more like kings than politicians. So does democracy still work? Or is it just the best option we've got? I'm Siobhan Marin. This is Quick Smart, the show that feeds you big ideas in bite-sized pieces. What are the downsides to democracy? Why was Plato not a fan? And how do we safeguard this system from all those dictator types? Someone who's been weighing up the options is host of the Philosopher's Zone on Radio National, David Rutledge. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Siobhan. Thank you. It's great to be back.
Okay, I'm not pointing any fingers here, but let's just say an elected leader starts spreading disinformation, muzzling journalists, and dismantling the arms of government. Do voters deserve or just need to accept whatever comes next because they voted for them?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's often pointed out Hitler came to power as the result of a democratic election in the early 30s. It does simplify the story a little bit, but Hitler was, you know, a master manipulator of democratic processes. And so, yeah, you know, people, I guess, have to face the consequences of their decisions. But then, on the other hand, yes, democracy has all sorts of ways in which the will of the people can be sort of hijacked or manipulated. Yeah, it's quite vulnerable to that.
So democracy dates back to the ancient Greeks, but our philosopher friend Plato was actually quite skeptical of the system. Why is that?
Yeah, he was super skeptical. Plato, famously author of The Republic, like a lot of Plato's works, The Republic is presented as a dialogue between Socrates and a number of other characters. And Socrates, we find, is not a fan of democracy when it comes to this notion of how to organise the ideal community. And Socrates says, and Socrates, people generally assume that he's a mouthpiece for Plato here, that if democracy is ruled by will of the people, then that's going to be a disaster because the people, by and large, are not too bright. You know, the ignorant masses should not have any say in how their state is governed because they don't have the faintest clue about how to govern a state.
Ouch.
Yeah, it stings, but you know, it's sort of a reasonable and logically consistent argument. You know, Socrates says that voting responsibly is a skill; it's something you have to learn how to do. And he says that, you know, you wouldn't want an untrained navigator to be navigating the ship that you're on. So then, why would you want a bunch of people who know nothing about statecraft to run a state? And Socrates also makes the point that, you know, democracy is vulnerable to being exploited by demagogues, and it's all too easy to sway the uneducated masses for his or her own gain.
Why is democracy held up as this, you know, bastion of the West, and we can't even imagine another system that we would go to?
I think democracy in the West gets this huge leg up, you know, coming out of the medieval period where the European Enlightenment happens. You get sort of ideas of liberalism. A lot of what we now recognise as modern political theory is born around that time. And democracy sort of comes along with all of that. The Enlightenment is one of those things, a little bit like the Industrial Revolution. We just can never think ourselves out of it. You know, Enlightenment, rationalism, liberalism, these are all things that we just come to be taken for granted as the way things are. It's very hard to imagine, much less, you know, argue for an alternative.
And liberalism, for those who hear the term all the time but aren't completely familiar with what it means.
Yeah, usually when people use the term, they're talking about a constellation of ideas that have to do with things like the autonomy of the individual. You know, the basic unit of society is the free and autonomous individual. You know, our best side is our rational side, our reason, our logic. They're there at the base of what liberalism is.
Australia really likes to consider itself the land of the fair go, but can we trust that people actually care about the experiences of others, including marginalised groups, and vote in that way?
There is sometimes a certain generosity of spirit that sort of spreads itself throughout the electorate. But times need to be good for that to happen. People need to feel fairly relaxed and not sort of under threat. And they need to feel that they have opportunities and just that their lives aren't really sort of hard and resistant. And because as soon as people start to feel like they're being ripped off, and as soon as people are sort of manipulated into believing that they're being ripped off, you know, by those immigrants over there, for example, that generosity of spirit ceases to express itself at the ballot box so much. And so people are just thinking about a fair go for me because my fair go is being threatened. If you convince enough people that Melbourne is being overrun by Sudanese gangs, then maybe they'll be scared enough to vote for more surveillance, more incarceration, increased police powers, restrictive immigration laws and all of that. And then people start to just think about themselves more. But there are many ways in which democracy works against that too. And
Yeah, I was curious about that actually. Why you think the legalization of same-sex marriage is an interesting case study when it comes to galvanizing support for a progressive issue?
Well, this is something that I came to believe having read the book written by my guest on the Philosopher's Zone. His name is Michael Furstein. He's at the University of Miami. He's got this book out titled Experiments in Living Together. And he sort of tackles this question of how democracy manages to score progressive goals when we know that the anti-democratic forces in our society are becoming more and more powerful. And his case study is the story of legalized same-sex marriage in the USA. And he sort of tells the story of how same-sex marriage began, or the arguments for it really sort of came about first through the work of gay rights activists all the way back in the 1950s and 60s. Then in the 1970s, Americans saw openly gay men and women starting to gain prominence in public life, you know, in state legislatures and so on. The AIDS crisis in the 80s gave a huge boost to public support and public sympathy for gay rights. And then from the 1990s, mainstream Americans start to see sympathetic portrayals of gay people and gay lives represented in popular culture. All of which means that by the time 2015 rolls around, people, by and large, are ready to accept same-sex marriage. And, you know, Michael Furstein's point is that while this decades-long process was certainly punctuated by certain debates being had among various social elites and certain laws being passed, that those debates and those pieces of legislation were happening in response to what was happening at the grassroots level of American life. And what was happening at the grassroots of American life was much more about emotions and relationships than it was about institutional arrangements. Once you have enough strength in those social connections, then people in the majority culture start to relax. It was like straight people were gradually coming to see gay people as just like us, you know. And so that close personal identification was what caused this amazing moral transformation in American society.
A good case study, I suppose, for other progressive causes. But of course, we're seeing many rights repealed in places like the US.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's right. It's only as strong as we continue to make it. You know, these things sort of constantly have to be buttressed and argued for and not taken for granted. Yeah.
How do we preserve the best parts of democracy?
Strong media. And I think that, you know, really strong accountability in journalistic practices is really important. It gets down to things like regulating social media platforms themselves, you know, breaking up the monopolies. I really think that that's where the key vulnerabilities lie, is in our media and in the way that we disseminate information, especially weaponized information.
And finally, David, a democratic socialist, Zohran Mamdani, has just been named the mayor of New York. What does that tell us about the state of democracy today?
Look, I think it tells us that at a time when anti-democratic forces really seem to have the upper hand, I think it just shows that in spite of the vulnerability of democracy, that you know, it still has real strength, and there is still sort of a grassroots campaign that speaks to unity rather than division is still going to work. You know, it's not just hopeless idealism. There really is something there, and it's sort of the engine or the fuel of democracy, and it hasn't run out yet.
Here's hoping for a brighter future. I've asked you some huge questions, David. And if listeners want to hear more of your musings, they can go to The Philosopher's Zone on Radio National. Thank you so much for your time again.
Thanks, Siobhan. That was fun.
Quick Smart was recorded on the lands of the Gadigal people. If you enjoyed this chat, send it to a friend who loves a democracy sausage. You might also be into our eps on why politicians are allowed to lie in election ads and how long Trump can keep ignoring the law. We'll put links to those and to David's podcast, The Philosopher's Zone, in our show notes. Thanks to my producer, Jesse Kay. And if you have any feedback or want to say hi, get in touch at quick.smart@abc.net.au.